Everybody.
Hello.
You're listening to Frankenstein's On Air, the on. Say it for me, Sage.
HCC, Hawk Radio, in Ybor.
The official channel. The
official radio station of HCC.
Hillsborough Community College. Home of the Hawk Tours.
I don't need this today.
Spit on that thing.
Okay. Well, you know what, everybody? Welcome to Talk To A.
Welcome to Talk To A podcast. Today, we're a couple. That's not right.
Today, I'm Haley Welch. I get to be Haley Welch. No, I'm Haley Welch.
I'm Haley Welch.
Okay, fine.
You can be. You can be a Dirty Dan.
Dirty Dan?
Anyways, you're listening to Frankenstein's On Air. I'm a Frankenstein. You're a Frankenstein.
Of course.
We still have green skin. We still have bolts in our neck. Our heads are flat. Our souls are also flat. Mm-hmm. Nothing happened yesterday. Yeah. And how have you... Well, let's just skip the whole how are you doing thing today and just go right into our first song because I don't think either of us want to talk about that. So yeah. We are doing, and we hope you guys are also doing. And
staying safe, right?
Yeah. So short intro, low energy today, but we're gonna boost it up later on. We got some movies for us, as we always do.
Yes.
I'll be talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Sage, what are you talking about?
Talking about one of my favorite movies of all time, Resolution from 2012.
I thought you were going to say Resident Evil, and I'm very glad I didn't say Resident Evil because those movies are garbage.
I love when she kicks the pane of glass into the dog and
I love
Resident
that.
Evil, I think, Afterlife.
I don't even know. I love when they end the first movie with saying, bring him to the Nemesis program.
I love how like base level fan service there is in that. Like, yeah, Chris and Claire and Leon and Jill, they're all in it, but like
they're all there,
but they're not, you know, they're not, it's not correct.
Right. Did I introduce yourself? I'm Tim. You're Sage.
I'm Sage.
Yeah. We're a little off the kilter today, guys.
Yeah.
First song we have, all that good stuff's coming up after. Right now we have White People for Peace by Against Me. See you guys in 3 minutes and 33 seconds.
Response to military aggression.
everybody. Welcome back. That was White People for Peace by Against Me. Hi, Sage. What were you going to say?
I just said we're back.
We are back. You're still listening to Frankenstein's on air. We are still Frankenstein's. We are still on air. We are still live from Ybor City, and we are still on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College. So, right now, Sage, I want to know one thing and one thing only. What did you watch recently?
I thought we were going to go with you first, but okay.
No. I'm not going to switch up the schedule all of a sudden.
Oh, I don't know why. Maybe I just keep forgetting the schedule, but...
Maybe you're stupid.
So, I watched Resolution by some of my favorite directors, Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, and it's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's on my Letterboxd top four. It's positively amazing. It's an indie film. I'm trying to find a way to explain it. It's very weird. So the premise of the movie is that this man, he's like a drug addict. He lives in a cabin in the middle of the woods, like this broken down little shed in the middle of the woods. And he just does drugs, hard drugs and, whatnot. And one day his best friend from, from like high school and his childhood basically, gets a message from him on like an email. And the email is a video of him just doing, you know, drug addict stuff.
As he does.
And his friend is obviously concerned, and so he decides he's going to go out there and he's going to sober him up. And so his friend drives out there. The man refuses to sober up, so he handcuffs him to a pipe in the shed, and he forces him to get sober. What happens then is a series of supernatural events surrounding the cabin and weird things happening in the area, cult members, weird French research students.
Not the weird French.
Oddly red drugs, very, very weird things going around. And
it sounds trippy.
It's up to the main character, the man trying to get his friends over. It's up to him to figure out what's happening and what's going on while trying to get his friends over. And it's an indie film made with like a budget of, I think, $10,000. And
that's less than Terrifier 1 had for a budget.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Made with less than $10,000. It is kind of one of those.
Did it come out?
Came out in 2012.
Damn, Daniel.
When you watch this movie, you really feel the, you can really feel the like love for filmmaking and, or like how
was
much
it their first film?
It was their first film, yeah. And like you can see the love for film and like they really, like they must have had so much fun. You can just tell they had so much fun like making it. And it is directed and written by Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead.
Benson of regular show fame. Benson?
No.
Mordecai?
No.
Rigby?
Nope.
Pops had to be there.
He might have been in the movie.
Skips is everywhere.
He's everywhere.
Skips
so.
Was there. So
we can throw it into the regular show universe.
Skips
but,
was there.
But what happened with this movie was they made it, and it was their first foray into filmmaking, and they stuck together, Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, and they work on many things as a filmmaking duo. They worked on Spring. Spring is a body horror romance film. They worked on...
That's an interesting pitch.
Yes. They worked on The Endless in 2017, which is...
Gotcha.
Which is a fun movie. It also is the sequel to Resolution. They worked on Loki season 1 and 2 and Moon Knight.
Oh shit! So they've gone to do some like actual stuff.
Yeah,
Loki. Even if it's Marvel stuff.
Even if it's Marvel, it's like they did Loki.
Their careers have taken off. They have actual talent. That's good for them. Happy for them.
They did Loki and Moon Knight. They did something in the dirt. They've done a lot of stuff, and they also work with a lot of like other. They also produce a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. So they've really
yeah.
That's like always. That's like kind of like Evil Dead. It's always sorry. I bring things back to Evil Dead too much. But it's I love those stories of people where they really, really go from nothing and they actually break mm-hmm. through.
Yeah.
American Dream may be a bunch of bull honky, but every now and then someone really does make it work.
Exactly.
They make it into the industry with just $10,000. That's, I think, even like Evil Dead still had like 100,000, I think. 10,000 is like literally nothing.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything else to say about?
Well, yeah. The
resolution.
This movie really makes me feel happy because it's such a love for film that made this, and just like all.
Any influences from other movies that they might have taken?
I think it feels kind of like it's got not a lot of Evil Dead, but the whole idea of being in a forest in a cabin, and supernatural things happening to you, obviously there was something there.
Yeah.
And I think that's very cool. But a lot of what stands out about this film is this movie succeeds with not a single song, no soundtrack. It is like it relies on just the audio of the areas they're
in. That's fun. Yeah.
And what's interesting,
sound design is often underappreciated part of filmmaking.
A lot of it is handheld, and you would think that's very amateur, but there's a story reason as to why it's handheld. It's not like a found footage film or anything. I don't want to give away the twist. But it's pretty cool what happens at the end of this movie. And Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead are my favorite, like some of my favorite directors. They really do a lot. And fun fact, we talked about Lake Mungo the other week.
Mungo, where Mung sells.
Mung
bunch
sells.
Of Mung heads.
And on the Blu-ray.
It'd be funnier if it was called like Dungo, like dung as in poopy.
Okay. Are you okay?
No.
But on the Blu-ray re-release for...
Funny if it's called Poop-ray, sorry.
You need to calm down, man. There's something going on. You need to... I mean, I know what's going on, but like, we need to take it back. So on the Blu-ray re-release for Lake Mungo, Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead actually have an interview where they talk about Lake Mungo's influence on their filmmaking.
That's interesting.
So there's a lot of Lake Mungo stuff going on in this movie. It's very cool.
Okay.
It is a horror movie, but it's more like a thriller than a horror movie. It's not very scary.
It doesn't sound that much. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Just by how you're describing it.
Yeah, but it's good, and I am going to, I'm definitely going to be showing some friends. I watched Lake Mungo 3 times last week, I watched it once by myself and then 2 other times with different people.
I feel
people.
That. Whenever I watch a film I really love, I'm like, hey, everybody around me, come watch this.
Yeah, that's like I show it to people. So I'm probably going to do with the same resolution this week.
I showed Ash vs. Evil Dead. Have you seen Ash vs. Evil Dead yet?
The TV show?
Yeah.
I saw the first like 2 episodes.
Okay, never mind. I can't spoil it. I'll just spoil it. I showed my grandmother that whole show, and there is an episode in that show that is very gross and not something you really normally want to watch with your grandmother.
Did she like it?
Yeah.
Cool. That's like people who... There's
you know
like,
what she calls Bruce Campbell?
What?
She calls Bruce Campbell Juicy Brucey, which is as uncomfortable as it
is. So uncomfortable.
That's so
oh my God.
It's really funny.
That's sad. It's not sad. It's weird. I can't think about that. That's messing my brain up. But I mean, watch Resolution. It's like it's everywhere streaming. It's super easy to find. And then afterwards, watch The Endless, which came out in 2017. I say it's a sequel, but it's more like adjacent, because all of Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead's films, they all are, all of their indie projects that they do, because they still do indie even though they've worked for Marvel, they still self-finance a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Most of them are in the same universe. It's not like the story arcs go from movie to movie or anything. It's just, this movie references that one. But I would recommend at least watching Resolution and then watching The Endless. And The Endless is very good. It's got a lot of time dilation stuff going on. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, watch those. But that's all I got to say about that. All
right.
Yeah.
For me, recently watched, I watched a very old Brazilian film. It's noted as Brazil's first horror movie, because that's all I talk about. It's the only genre
I might have heard of this. It sounds
At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul, introducing the Coffin Joe character, which is what a wonderful name, Coffin Joe.
Okay, I've not heard of this.
Coffin Joe apparently is like a bit of a Brazilian icon. He's like the Brazilian Freddy Krueger, Dracula.
Okay, all right, Coffin Joe,
but, like,
I see it.
He has no, like Dracula's vampire, Freddy Krueger, dream demon, Jason, weird zombie thing. Coffin Joe, he's just a guy. He's kind of a jerk. He's an atheistic, nihilistic butthead that he just goes around very outdated views on women that man has.
Who's the guy with the drive-in?
Huh?
the guy, his like the last drive-in. His name's Joe, right?
Oh, Joe Bob Briggs.
Joe Bob Briggs.
Yeah, no, they're very different characters.
Very different characters. Okay.
Very different people. I met Joe Bob Briggs. I have his autograph.
What?
Yeah, he's at a convention a couple of years ago.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Anyways, so I'm not going to talk about this for too long, but basically,
I did have something I also wanted to talk about because I really don't have a lot to talk about today.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm replacing probably film news or something like
that's
that.
That's fine.
With it. Yeah. But, okay. Yeah.
So anyways, like this whole film is just following this guy around who's just a jerk. Like at the beginning, it takes place in like a holy day and you're not supposed to eat meat because it's like a Catholic holiday. And he's like, frick that, I want to go get some lamb. And his girlfriend's like, no, baby, the devil is tempting you. And he's like, then I'll invite the devil to dinner itself. And I was like, damn. And then he just goes around, like he cuts someone's fingers off with a bottle of glass. And it's mm-hmm. gory. It's like it's a 1963 film, and it's pretty gory.
Okay.
The whole film is actually kind of this interesting crossroads between like older horror and modern horror, because it's on one hand it's black and white, lots of like kind of expressionistic use of shadows and stuff like that. Coffin Joe himself is dressed like Dracula or Mr. Hyde or even like Jack the Ripper. He got a top hat on and everything. But the things that he says, like all of his anti-religious stuff, all of his extreme violence, all of that feels very 70s and almost slashery. Mm-hmm. Anyways, the film at the end, he gets cursed by a witch who makes ghosts come back. The ghosts of the people he killed come to haunt him. Mm-hmm. And then he dies of fright. And the next one, he comes back. He's like, actually, I lived. Psych. And then he is a jerk some more. And then an angry mob of people chase him into a swamp where he dies. And then a priest convinces him to convert to Christianity before he dies. And the third film, he comes back and he says, psych, I take it back. That wasn't Ooh. Me. I faked my own death. And also, I hate God still.
What?
Yeah. So, what a wonderful, God bless you, Coffin Joe.
Wow.
One interesting thing about this film before we go to our next music break, the director, Jose Mojica Marines, who he wrote and directed and starred in this movie as Coffin Joe, he kept his nails pretty long. But then after he made the Coffin Joe character, it kind of became a trait of him. And he only cut his nails twice after that, in 1982 and 1998. One time was on TV as like a public, like it was an event to watch this man cut his nails because he famously had long nails. And then in 1998, they did it again. But this time they donated the nail clippings. They auctioned off the nail clippings and the earnings went to a children's charity, which is really sweet, but also really weird because who wanted Coffin Joe's fingernails? Someone still got though.
Well, I just looked it up. There's a $110 Inside the Mind of Coffin Joe box set with all of the movies from Arrow Video.
Hell yeah. You should definitely buy that.
That sounds... I've never heard of this. I've really never heard of this. This is insane.
Very interesting. Very interesting little rabbit hole I went down over the weekend. But anyways, got another song for you for no particular reason called Man I Killed by NoFX. And it's a very short song. We'll be back in just a minute. And after that, it's time for one of my favorite movies of all time, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'll see you guys then.
Epic.
When they tightly strap me in, give me lethal injection. Just a few moments to live. No remorse for what I did. It's for the betterment of man. I gave the utmost sacrifice. Before more damage could be done, I took his life. There was a split second of silence when the dart punctured the skin. PDI rolled back in head. Body dropped from the voice in. Executed by the state, all appeals would be in vain. I was not criminally insane. In fact, I was found to be an otherwise caring and respectable member of society. A minor threat, except for that one that I killed. As the sedatives take effect, I just smile and close my eyes. There's a priest kneeling next to me. He asked me if I realized I was going straight to hell. And he thought that I should know that the man I killed to placement planned this whole scenario.
Welcome back. Alrighty. That was The Man I Killed by NoFX. I guess we don't know who that man is. But Now, this is a moment I have been waiting for since we started this show. Also, getting ahead of myself, Aaron Lancet.
Hey, everyone, you're listening to HCC's Hawk
Radio. Can you not?
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
You're listening to Hawk Radio.
I keep him in line, by the way.
On Hillsborough Community College, official radio station, live from New York City. This is Frankenstein's on air. Now we're going to talk about the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Which definitely happened and were based on a true story.
Definitely happened and was definitely based on a true story.
Just like how the video game is called based on a true story.
It is. This film is Tobe Hooper's masterpiece, directed by him, written by him and co-writer Kim Henkel, who's still around. He's still alive. Tobe Hooper is no longer with us anymore.
Sadly.
Stars Marilyn Burns as Sally, Gunnar Hansen as Leatherface, Jim Saito as the cook and the gas station clerk, and Ed Neal as the hitchhiker. I've met Ed Neal.
Oh, really?
I have his autograph on my wall. And yeah, this is a film that I don't think anyone. Well, it's getting more recognition in recent years, more appreciation in recent years, as it should. But still today, I think most people are surprised just how much more there is to this film than it really seems. I mean, this is a film that is so... On one hand, it's brilliant in how simple it is, and it's brilliant in how complicated it is. It's so multi-layered, and yet it's so simple. It's a film... Psycho is the granddaddy of the slasher film, but this is the daddy of the slasher film, because Psycho obviously kind of started and popularized the genre, but this is what gave it its formula, more than Halloween even. This is a film about a bunch of young youths. They go on a road trip, and they encounter some people they shouldn't have. They go to a place they shouldn't be at, just like Crystal Lake or Elm Street, you know, all these bad places. They end up in some place they shouldn't, and things go horribly wrong, and they're killed off one by one. And then, of course, at the end, we're left with only one survivor, who is a woman. You know, Sally is like the very first final girl, and she has to escape the killers and thwart them. And very simple setup. It's a film you've probably seen 100 times if you've watched any horror slasher movie, and this still hasn't ever been topped. Even if that sounds very basic and maybe that's like slashers aren't really your thing, still watch this movie because this one handles it differently. This is the best execution of that formula which it created.
Mm-hmm.
It's acted incredibly well. Remember Roger Ebert, when back in his newspaper days, long before he had the TV show, when he reviewed this film, he said, "It's shot incredibly well, it's acted incredibly well, and yet I have no idea why they made it."
Mm-hmm.
And that really kind of emphasizes the kind of impact this film had at the time. Because think about this. This film is hyper-violent. This is a film where there is no Dracula, there is no Frankenstein, there is no science fiction going on. It's just a movie about horrible people horribly maiming others.
Yeah.
Innocent people for no particular reason besides, well, food. But, and this came only... 15 years, just I love putting this into context. 15 years ago today, we were on like Saw 4.
Mm-hmm.
Films were already very violent 15 years ago. 15 years before Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Fly came out. Or like they were making sequels to Godzilla movies.
Yeah.
Or the movies about giant bugs. Or they were still making Dracula films back 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And so things came from like Dracula and The Fly to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. What the hell happened in those 15 years
also,
that made things so much more violent?
I just want to say, I love this movie so much.
Exactly.
It's a 5 out of 5. And one of the reasons I love it so much is it's got this very grimy feel to it. It feels gross. It feels like yucky. I can't really explain like the feeling I get when I watch it, but it's just like,
It feels so real. I showed this to my friend once, and she refuses to watch it ever again. Which is insane for a film 50 years old to still have that effect on people.
Yeah, like it's such a fun like movie too.
There's so much we gotta talk. I'm glad this film is gonna eat up both the history segment and my solo film segment because there's so much to talk about with this movie.
I do wanna shoot an honorable mention at the 2003 remake.
It's solid.
It's
not brilliant like its original is, but it's a solid slasher film.
I wanna say that this franchise did make one of my favorite like shots in a movie, and it is from the 2003.
That is the one stroke of brilliance in
that
movie.
That movie is incredibly whatever to me. Like
I'd give it a more than a whatever.
I like it. It's just I don't have much to say about it. But that scene, like. That's a really good shot.
Arlie Ermey's performance, that is Oscar brilliance as well. Mm-hmm.
I like that. I also like in this original movie, that shot where she's walking up to the house.
Everyone loves that shot.
That's like the best. Mm-hmm. That whole sequence is the best.
But I'm glad you mentioned how this film was shot because it does have a very grainy and a very documentary look to it, which it gets a lot of praise for that, especially because for the majority of this film's history, it was mostly only available on like old VHS copies and then like old DVD. I have an old DVD copy of this film from the early 2000s and it looks very low quality. But if you watch any of the modern restorations of this film and even like an original 35 millimeter print of the film, it's also shot very beautifully. It's framed really well. I mean, especially the shots of like the setting sun, which we'll talk more about those in a second here. There are some genuinely really beautiful looking shots in this film. I like to describe this movie as painting with bloodshed because this film is really just a work of modern art to me. God, where do I even go from there? So anyways, what happened in this film? What happened in the 15 years that made us go from The Fly and movies like them about giant ants? What made us go from giant ants to someone being chopped up with chainsaws and shoved on meat hooks? It might seem like a bit of a puzzle, but it's actually pretty simple.
Sorry, I'm going through like all the shots I can remember in this movie, and I just realize how much I love it so much.
Yeah,
it's
but
really,
anyways,
really awesome.
What do you think happened in the 15 years?
I don't know. I think people just wanted more.
Wrong. Vietnam War.
Oh,
does that make sense?
That makes so much sense.
That's
honestly, I could give you like some pretentious like people were tired of what we were getting, but like also the Vietnam War.
And there's a bit more to it than that. I do think at this time there was a rise of indie artists coming up because cameras are becoming a bit more available and smaller. That was what we saw with Night of the Living Dead as well. Mm-hmm. But for the first time in history, Americans were watching war footage in their living rooms on the TV. They were seeing very violent stuff going on. There's that one very famous image of a soldier assassinating someone. Not footage. Footage of he just points his pistol at some like a Viet Cong prisoner's head and just executes him live on TV. Not live on TV, but it's a very famous footage. So they were seeing people die en masse, and young people en masse were being drafted, and we had news reporters going across the country and seeing this stuff. Yeah. It was horrifying. And also, it was for no real purpose. No one really knew why. I mean, we knew why we were in Vietnam, but no one really, like, what are we really doing? That ain't us. That's across the globe. People, obviously, famously, Americans didn't even know where Vietnam was on a globe. They had no idea where we were or why we were there. And so, as a result, you see a lot of films in the early 70s and late 60s about senseless violence. Last House on the Left, The Hills Have Eyes, and my best example of it being the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This is a film where people are slaughtered senselessly with no real purpose. I mean, it is famously Leatherface is a cannibal. They are chopping up and eating people. But that's only ever implied. They never outright say, we are killing you because we want to eat you. From the main character's perspective, they are just being slaughtered, which is just a very powerful thing to think about. So going on more with that idea about the politics of this film, it's not just a film about the Vietnam War exclusively, but that definitely is an influencing factor of why the film is the way it is. And I should also say, for anyone who hasn't watched this, I mean, we've seen a lot worse now at this point. Like, I'm not going to say the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the most shocking film ever made, but for 1974, it was definitely up there. People left the theaters in droves. It was banned in many, many countries. I know with England,
it's kind of tame compared to now. I mean, it's still a lot, but
I
like,
still think it's very nightmarish and like a very hard film to sit through if you haven't watched it a lot. Yeah. Like I have, I watch it as a comfort film because I'm edgy.
I don't know. I never saw it as that. I guess I've always been fine with a lot of the stuff I see. So like, I never had a visceral reaction to it. But like, I know a lot of people do find it hard to sit through.
It's very different, and also, and for a modern sensibility, I think most people wouldn't be that shocked by the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Mm-hmm. But it is a very it's a very draining film, especially like the dinner scene. There's a very long sequence at the end where it's basically just Marilyn Burns screaming her heart out as she's strapped in this chair and forced to watch the family eat dinner while they all laugh and mock at her. Mm-hmm. And there's pig noises overlaid over it. There's these all these really uncomfortable close-ups of her eyes and the veins in her eyes and her face, which just are just incredible. And it's a very hard film to sit through at times if you haven't seen it before or if you aren't used to films like this.
It's also one of those franchises that it's the first one is like, okay, they're not all bad, but none of them are anything to write home about except the first one.
And two. Two is brilliant.
Oh, two has Chop Top, so...
And it's funny.
But, so I kind of... I just don't like two as much as this one.
I don't like it as much, but I do love it a lot. But anyways, like imagine in 1974, you've seen films like Dracula and The Fly, and then imagine seeing this in the theaters for the first time. Mm-hmm. Everything's dark. You are strapped in just there with in that dinner scene where everything's black, and you're just sitting there hearing on the loudspeakers her screaming and all this chaos. It would be a nightmare to watch. Yeah. It'd be horrifying. I would love to watch this film in theaters today because that still must be such an incredible effect it had on the audiences. And also, I love in that scene specifically, a lot of it is shot through a POV. So it literally feels like Tobe Hooper is strapping you as the audience in and taking you on a nightmare ride.
Yeah,
it's just incredible. But anyways, back to the politics of this film. There's many different ways you can interpret this film. And I'm getting a lot of I've read books on this film, as my co-host can see here. I've read...
Yeah, I'm looking at...
Chainsaw Confidential by Gunnar Hansen himself. We got...
Leatherface versus Tricky Dick. What is this about?
Leatherface versus Tricky Dick. That was going to be the punchline for my joke, and you read it too soon.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Leatherface versus Tricky Dick is a reading of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre as a political satire for the Richard Nixon administration and the ongoing Watergate scandal that was... Mm-hmm. Still unfolding in the time of the making of this film. And then Behind the Mask of the Horror Actor by Doug Bradley covers a section on Leatherface. Many different ways to interpret this movie, as well as Men, Women, and Chainsaws famously covered this movie a lot in their section on gender studies in the modern horror film. But really the best way to... And then, of course, Tobe Hooper said it's a film about meat. There's a lot of references to slaughterhouses in this film. Our characters are killed like cattle. One of them, or two of them, hit on the head with sledgehammers, just like cattle were before they had the air guns. Mm-hmm. And then one's put on a meat hook like an animal. And then, of course, they're cooked and eaten like animals. And so, very blunt, straightforward. It's a vegan movie. Tobe Hooper was a vegan when he made the movie, which is really funny. But also, it's more than that, because I say this is a film that captures 1970s American society at its core. This is a film about everything going on in America in this moment. This is the death of the hippie movement, who Tobe Hooper, he was an Austin, Texas hippie. And 1974 is the tail end of that peace and love hippie movement of the 60s. And really, the hippie movement at this point is a story of failure. I mean, when it started off, it was, you know, we can change the world, we can bring peace and love to the earth, you know, all that wonderful, all you need is love, all that very positive messaging. But ultimately, it didn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
Richard Nixon was elected president, and he rolled back a lot of the progressive policies of the 60s, or he didn't enact any more. America went for a much more conservative rather than progressive leaning for the next 20 years of history, really. Sorry, I'm drawing a blank. And the Vietnam War was still going on.
Yeah.
For almost 10 years, that war was going on. And at the time of the making of the film, the war was still going on. It wouldn't end for another year by the time after it came out. Really, the hippie movement did not... it did accomplish a lot. I don't want to disregard a lot of the movement, a lot of the progresses of the 1960s. But ultimately, they did not achieve that world of peace and love that they were looking for. And in the early 70s, you see a reconciliation with the fact that the world did not want to listen to them anymore. Mm-hmm. And so this is a film about, they don't outright say they're hippies, but they're young people dressed in like bell-bottom jeans and colorful shirts and poofy hair. They look very hippie-esque, and they're riding in a van. And this is a film about young people ultimately that are slaughtered by a maniacal older generation senselessly, which can make you think of young people that were slaughtered by the old people that sent them off to war, or the young people that were slaughtered, not literally but figuratively, with like a Kent State massacre, all these awful examples of right-wing oppression in that era going on. And really, at its core, it's a pessimistic movie. This film says that there is no peace and love, that at its core, the universe is a violent and unforgiving place. Mm-hmm. Leatherface, at the end of the film, is not punished. The hitchhiker dies, but Leatherface, ultimately, he keeps on swinging his chainsaw, dancing around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to wrap this up soon, because I've been talking for a while already. God, I feel like I haven't even scratched the surface. I'll say to reinforce my opinion on why this film is a film about the universe as itself, or even, as Gunnar Hansen says, a film about the apocalypse. They open the film with shots of the sun. They open it with a beautiful shot of a corpse strung up as a grisly work of art in a graveyard to the rising sun. And then it goes to the opening credits of shots of solar flares over the opening credits. And then on the radio, it has a radio news reporter list bad news after bad news after bad news, like a baby chained up in a basement, E. cholera epidemic, random acts of violence, like everything on the news is just bad. And then when we finally get to our main characters, they're reading their horoscopes in an astrology book, and even the horoscopes are bad. So everything is just wrong. And then they pick up a hitchhiker who, the very hippie thing to do, pick up a hitchhiker, show some brotherly love. And he tries to kill them. Everything is going poorly. And so my point is, there's an ongoing theme about the stars and the sun specifically, heavenly bodies. And that's really meant to symbolize the fact that at its core, the universe, like I said, is an unforgiving place. My favorite example of this is the hitchhiker, when he's kicked out of the van, he smears his bloody palm into a strange symbol on the side of the van.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a detail no one ever picks up on. And throughout the film, Franklin, is the one of the characters, Franklin, is asking, what does that symbol mean? Do you think it means anything? And the characters never know, and there's never an answer given. And most audiences don't even pick up on this. So the question is, why is that in the film? Why is that symbol in there? Did it actually mean anything at all, or is it important at all? And after the second kill, the two first kills in one scene, the most grisly one, the one where Pam is shoved onto a meat hook, it cuts directly after her screaming in agony as she's slowly dying out. It cuts to a shot of the sun, and then it cuts directly to a shot of that symbol on the side of the van. And then while the camera is still holding on that symbol, you hear Franklin off camera ask, do you think it means anything? And that is so perfect to me, because mm-hmm. he's at, what is it? It's just him asking what the symbol means. But really, what Tobe Hooper is actually doing there is he's asking the audience, do you think this film means anything?
Yeah.
Do you think it's just a film about senseless violence, as a lot of critics thought it was, as Roger Ebert thought it was? Or do you think this is a film about anything greater, a film about American politics or society? He's directly asking them to engage with the artwork and ask them what they think about it. And that just blows my mind every time. It is a truly brilliant film. I'll wrap it up there. I still have more to talk about with this film, surprisingly. I didn't even get into the making
There's
of this movie.
So much to talk about,
I think I might do a second show on this. I'm not going to lie.
That's fine.
I think I'm going to continue Texas Chainsaw Massacre
if you
talk
do,
next week.
If we do a second show, I'm probably going to watch, not the first one, because I've seen it so many times, I could talk mm-hmm. about it forever. I'm going to watch one of the other ones and talk about how much I don't like it.
We could do a whole Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We could talk about the whole franchise, man.
You want to get on a call and watch a couple of them?
Of course.
Okay, then anytime. Let's just do that.
But, most of them are garbage.
Most of them suck, but they're fun to watch. Like the 3D, that's the 2000s.
Oh, that one's really fun to watch.
That one's so much fun to watch, but it's
it's garbage.
It's not very good. I think the only one that I can't stand to watch is the 2022 one. Like,
I don't want to watch that one again. That one sucks.
Yeah, like, out of all of them, like, even if they're bad, they're fun to watch, but that one...
That one's frustrating.
That one's just really, like, not anything good. But
anyways.
Oh, okay.
Let's do one more song break here. I got a decade... Actually, no, we're going to do Smash It Up by The Damned. I'll see you guys when that's over.
Thank you. Hi, welcome back.
Hello.
You're listening to Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College. Live from Ybor City, and this is Frankenstein's on...
Air.
Air.
You just transitioned. That was crazy. That was insane. Congrats, though. Congrats.
Yeah, I went from woman to man there.
That was wild. Crazy emotional rollercoaster.
All right, Sage, tell us what the movie is okay, today.
So, I watched a little movie, and you're going to laugh at me. Yep. And you're going to be like, why are you excited to talk about this? Yep. It's called La Llorona.
Wait a minute. Oh, that one? That one movie from like a few years ago?
So
the horror film?
So it's a horror film, yes.
Oh, man. Is it good?
So you're thinking of this like slop Conjuring Universe horror movie, right?
Was it Conjuring Universe?
It was Conjuring
Universe.
Okay,
now I am going to make fun of you.
So hold on. So here's the thing. You're thinking of this slop Conjuring Universe movie.
True.
About a woman.
Yes.
Or ghost woman who kidnaps children, right?
Isn't it based off a real urban legend?
Yeah, it's based off of a real like Guatemalan, or I think it's Guatemalan.
It's something Latin American.
Yeah, a urban legend, okay?
Yes.
So, I actually didn't watch that movie. And let me explain why. Here's what happened. So, a couple nights ago, I was sitting down, and I want to watch a horror movie, and I was scrolling through the horror on the Criterion list, because I love the Criterion Collection so much. And they had a movie called La Llorona on it. And I was like, the Conjuring Universe film has a Criterion release? No, it doesn't. There's no way.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked up The Curse of La Llorona and started watching it. And I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. This actually sucks so much. And it was full of Conjuring Universe stuff. It was just like
more Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yeah. And they like, at the end of it, they tease Annabelle. And it's like, mm-hmm. Okay, all right, well, whatever. I finished this movie, and I was so angry at myself. And I was like, why is this on the Criterion Collection?
Yeah.
Why is this awful movie there? Well, I looked it up. There was another movie that came out in 2019. So The Curse of La Llorona, the one I watched, came out in 2019. The same year in Guatemala, a film released called La Llorona.
Oh,
same exact
that's
year.
That's confusing.
And it was Guatemalan, and... it got a Criterion release, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I don't have anything else to do for the rest of the day. I might as well just watch it, right, and compare the two. So I watched the Guatemalan one, and oh, my God.
Actually really good.
So good.
Really?
This movie was insane. I get why it has a Criterion release.
Of course, the Guatemalans handled their own story better than, like, a dumbass American.
100%. Because, so, the Curse of La Llorona Conjuring film is about, like, a family... being haunted by her.
And it's in a haunted house.
In a haunted house movie, yeah. Right? The Guatemalan version is a movie about politics. It is about a dictator. This dictator is a Guatemalan dictator. He's on trial for crimes against humanity. And there's these and the movie follows his family living with him in their like nice mansion. And every day they wake up, there are hundreds of protesters outside, like calling him a murderer and whatnot.
Yeah.
And the whole movie is, it cuts in between him in the court, like the days of him going to court and him in the house, because he's sick, he's dying.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're watching this dictator go to court and be hung up for all of the things he did, all these horrible, awful things he did. And then you see his home life with his family. His family hates him. Mm-hmm. And La Llorona, the ghost, is more of a metaphor in this situation for what is actually going on, because one of the maids is convinced that La Llorona is haunting them because of all of the things that the dictator did. And then she is. That's the thing, is she is haunting them.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is like – a lot of it is super subtle, and they don't know if maybe the maid is just messing with them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And in the way – goes about is it like tries to it the movie tries to make you feel bad for the dictator, and then immediately when you start feeling bad, it cuts back to the court and it goes, he did all these horrible, awful things.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's acted, the way it's shot, all of this stuff is so good and so amazing. I was blown away by how awesome this film was and how like unsettling of a horror film it could be, because when they talk about all the horrible things he did, they go into detail about these awful, awful things.
They don't show it either. They just describe it.
They just describe it. You're just
That's a good movie
you're
right
hearing
there.
It like just you're hearing these things described, and you're seeing all these protesters. Like, the background audio for a lot of the scenes in this movie are people yelling.
That's really
good. Because you're in the house.
It's a constant reminder. Yeah, that's really
good.
You
hear the protesters outside the whole time. And it is insane. It's so cool. And it just made me wonder, like, why in the same year did we get this awful movie from America called The Curse of La Llorona with, like, over, like, three times the budget that was so bad, and then we got this amazing foreign La Llorona film. And I loved it so much. It's another movie I'll be showing some friends. I just, it's amazing.
That sounds really good.
It's amazing what they did, and it got a Criterion release with, like, special artwork and all this, like, stuff. So I'm definitely going to be buying the Blu-ray for that. And it was amazing. If you haven't, I would never recommend that American version, but I would 100% recommend you go watch. It's just called La Llorona, not The Curse of La Llorona, just La Llorona. LALLORONA.
That sounds like a really good recommendation.
It's so good.
Guys,
it's
go
so
watch good. La Llorona, like, go watch Coffin Joe, and go watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I might show you La Llorona. I don't know. Sure. yeah, that's what I want to talk about. We do have to, we're getting towards the end though.
You have anything else for us? Did you want to replace movie news or something else? What'd you have in mind?
It
might take a while though. If you want to just save for next week.
Honestly, I was just going to talk about, I rewatched Qui-Gon from, that I covered a couple weeks ago.
And
yeah, it's still as much fun as the first time I watched it. Okay. So yeah, good. I mean, go watch all these movies we've mentioned, honestly. Just go watch them.
Sure.
But I really don't have much to say, so.
Okay, well, we still have 3 minutes, so let's think of something to say.
Did I
explain my tow truck driver story on here?
No, I have a tow truck driver story as well, but go ahead.
Well, when I crashed my car?
Yeah, when you crashed.
Okay, well, we have a little random story for you guys, because we have a few minutes before we head out of here. So I crashed my car a couple weeks ago, and this is kind of like a horror movie, so it's a little related. Because I was sitting there waiting 6 hours for my tow truck driver to ride to show up, and then he gets there at like 8 at night, and he's like, "Hey, do you mind if I go to a drive thru? I'm really hungry. I've been working since 5 a.m. I was like, "Yeah, man, sure. I'm not gonna say no to that." And we get there, and there's a homeless man sitting at the drive thru window, and he says, "Hey, man, buy me a small fry." And he's like, "Yeah, sure, I'll buy you one." And I was like, "Oh, that's nice of him." But then while they're waiting for the food to come out, which for some reason takes like 10 minutes for the food to come out. They start talking and they start arguing about Christianity.
Oh my God.
So I'm having like one of the worst days of my life. Just crashed my car like 5 hours from home and right before the hurricane was hitting. And I'm sitting here thinking about how I'm going to fix my car and whatever. And then I'm listening to this tow truck driver argue with this homeless man about religion. And at one point, I thought they were going to start fighting because he touched him and he was like, "Hey, don't touch me, man." And another point, he's like, "How are you going to talk about God when you got alcohol on your breath?" And I was like, "Holy crap." Anyways, they finally calm down. He gets a small fry and they leave. And then almost done here, he's driving away. I don't know what to say. I was like, "Oh, you handled that well." And the tow truck driver, I swear to God, he goes, "Yeah, well, you know, I've had a lot of experience handling these situations. You know, I've killed someone before."
Oh, my.
And I'm sitting here 5 hours from home with a complete stranger telling me he's killed someone before. And I'm like, what? And then he clarified that he used to be an ex-cop. And I was like, oh, no. Still not great. But at least it, like, that, you know, tracks more than just, you know, I just killed someone. So that was interesting. That's my spooky story for you guys today. Don't crash your car. We're at the end here. Thanks for listening, guys. It's been another successful episode of Frankenstein's on Air. Next week, we'll talk more about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and more films, as we always do.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, next week will be better than this week was. Chin up, everybody.
Chin up.
You've been listening to Frankenstein's on Air, live from Ybor City on Hawk Radio, the official radio station on HGC. That's it.
See you guys. See ya. Bye.